The next person up is Robert Scott Adams, who I assume, given the job he has, was the gift of patience. And we appreciate your exercising it today and your patience with us. So welcome. We can allot a half an hour to this report right now. And if you could maybe take about 10 to 15 minutes of it and leave us about 15 minutes to talk to you in response.
I'll give you more than that.
Thank you so much.
Since we're in a... we're in a fundraiser in New York and a fundraiser down here. I was wondering if I could pitch for someone to give me one of their unopened bottles of water. Whoa! Thanks, appreciate it. I don't know where... I have a lot of different ways I can go with this, but I'm going to go with the beginning thing. People don't know who and what I am. Okay, so let's start from the beginning. I was born in Rochester, New York. The only child, the only adopted child of Elizabeth and Alan Adams, which I consider to be a blessing because they didn't have to choose me. They could have left me wherever I was, but they didn't. Anyway, I grew up pretty well educated, working class family, that kind of thing, blue collar. My mother worked in a factory. My father was a mechanic. From a young age, I listened to radio because TV was a basically, I'm dating myself, television was a basically new invention. And we had a really small black and white TV. So I listened to radio a lot. Radio became my sort of playmate. As a result of that, my father recognized that I really enjoyed radio, so one day he sort of, I guess, got a correlation between my enjoying radio and what maybe I might do later on in life, and he managed to get me a small tape recorder, which I would tape radio shows off the radio stations, and then I would put my voice on them and try to splice it in and myself into a DJ. Fast forward to high school. One day I'm walking through the Rochester Institute of Technology with my junior class, and we pass the radio station, the campus radio station. And everybody else goes on, and I stop because I'm fascinated by what's going on behind that booth. So the guy's sitting there, and he motions to me to come in. He says, "You're interested in this stuff, huh?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "Well, I tell you what, I got to go to the bathroom. Have a seat. When this record goes off, push this button." It was an old cart machine. He said, "When that light comes on, push that button." He said, "If I'm not back by the time this goes off, you're on your own." And he walked out the door.
Oh, my God. All
right. No, it didn't. No, no. It didn't happen like he left. I got on the air. I was an instant success, and I was a big hit. Didn't happen like that. He came before the second cart was over, and he resumed his show. But I caught the bug at that point. A few years later, I met a young man who was we were at a function together, a social function. And I was still in high school. And I found out that he did the overnight jazz show on one of our commercial radio stations. And so I bugged him for a while. And beginning of the summertime, he said, "You know, when you have time, if you want, you can come up and you can sit in on my show. And you can, you know, check out what I'm doing." So I would check him out, and I'd sit there, and I'm watching. He'd spin the records, and he'd, you know, do what DJs do. And as he got more comfortable with me, he would go to the bathroom and say, "You can sit here and, again, seg records." Then as he got more comfortable with me, he would get these mysterious phone calls where he would leave the station for hours at a time where I would have to seg records. I wasn't allowed to say anything because, of course, that'd be a different voice. But I would seg records back, and segging, I guess, for all of you who don't know, it's transitioning one record to the other, make a smooth transition. So anyway, I went to college in Atlanta, Georgia. I went to Morehouse College. We had a carrier current. Those of you who don't know, that means the radio station, instead of going through a transmitter, it goes through a telephone line, which means you can only get the radio station in a very close proximity, which was the campus. So, you know, I did that for a while. And then Clark College, which is now Clark Atlanta, opened up their mass communications department. And that's where it kind of all started, because then they had a 2,500-watt FM signal. You were able to hear it all over Atlanta. I was fortunate enough to get a job as one of the announcers. You know, I was able to study broadcasting, And at one point, special thanks to Equal Opportunity, the number one rock station in the city needed to have a black announcer. So the call went out to all black announcers, all black male announcers, to apply for the job. I got the job. I went and auditioned. They called me back. 2 weeks later, they called me back again. I didn't hear from them for 2 weeks. And one day, they called me and said, you're our new announcer. So I did overnights. I did midnight to 6 for 3 years. Then I ended up doing middays for another 2 years. After that, the college radio station I worked at, WCLK in Atlanta, Clark College, they offered me the job as their program director, which is a paid position, professional position. So at that point, I went on to program that station for 3 years. With the help of some great students, some great community volunteers, we made it one of the preeminent jazz stations in America at this point. If you check it out, you check your stats, you check the station, you understand it is a non-commercial station. From there, I went to Las Vegas, where I worked for the university station, KUNV. Sort of reminds me of this station in a way, because they were run by the Board of Regents, but yet they entrusted the day-to-day operations to the student council. Now, I was told when I came for the interview that there was going to be a lot of politics involved. I was going to have to deal with the student council because every year it changes. And every year they have different needs and wants and, you know, different demands. But one thing stuck out was interesting when I met with them for the first time. In mass, they said to me, you know, we don't want you here. The Board of Regents says we have to have you, but we don't want you. It reminds me of this situation. Because it's funny how everybody I talk to says to me, boy, you're really taking on a hell of a job. Boy, I really wish you luck. Dwayne was even nice enough to tell people if they prayed to put me in their prayers. Now, that's kind of funny. It is, on one hand, but it's kind of sad on the other hand. Because, you know, for all this, you know, you have to do this and you have to learn how to do this and you have to deal with this board and that board and that board. That doesn't tell me there's a lot of cooperation from me being in this position. I spoke to some of you candidly. I spoke to some of you privately. And I understand that neither of the factions wanted me here. So it's the same situation. But I won't get into that. That's just an aside. Okay, so from there, I took a detour. I worked for public television in Alabama. I was their promotions director. From there, I moved back to Las Vegas. I worked for KCEP, which is owned by the Economic Opportunity Board of Nevada. I did that for a year and a half. And moved to Washington, D.C., where I worked for a record company, and it goes on and on and on. But that's basically the broadcasting experience. I appreciate the opportunity to do this job. I had basically withdrawn from the selection process, as I'm sure a lot of you know, because I was disenchanted with the way I was being dealt with. But Lonnie Hicks, Greg Guma, Steve Brown all encouraged me to think about it, consider it, and give it a try. And that's what I'm going to do. Now, I only have a year. Okay? I ain't got but a year. It's already been 3 months. You know what that means? 9 months, y'all. Okay? So this is where we are. My report is included, just like everybody else's. Again, I have a lot of different ways I can go with this, but I think I'm going to go with this way. And then you can ask questions afterwards. First of all, we're in our 12th day of our fund drive, which started on the 15th and goes into February 10th. So far, we have $382,000. I'm told that is pretty good. I'm told that, you know, that's not bad, and perhaps we will make our goal. My staff, they feel confident that the last half of the fund drive, we will make more money than we did in the beginning. If that's the case, I would love to tell people around February 4th, we've made our $1 million. We're ending it right now. We can go back to regular programming. That may or may not happen. I'm not sure. But what I've been doing for the last 90 days or 3 months or whatever is really trying to figure out my staff, trying to figure out who really wants to work, who really wants to serve the audience as opposed to serve themselves. It's a very, very difficult task, especially when you're being told that you have enemies from all sides. You have enemies that are already there. You have enemies that are on the peripheral, and they're just, they're waiting to attack you for anything you do. But no one says you have support from this, this, that, that, and that. I don't hear that, except I hear it from the national office. I do hear that. You know, Lonnie will always tell me, I got your back. Of course, he doesn't want me to jump off a bridge when I don't make the money I'm supposed to make. When I don't reduce spending and I don't have the station recover. I understand. But nevertheless, he does tell me. Greg tells me the same thing, you know, just hang in there. But nevertheless, it's about setting up evaluations. It's about trying to figure out, does the staff that I have inherited, do they really want to do the job at hand? And do they want to do it with deadlines? Do they want to be accountable? Do they want to stop saying when we miss a national broadcast, for example, well, you know, I talked to the operations guy, and he said it was going to happen. And the operations guy says, well, you know, I thought the guy was supposed to be there in time, but he didn't get there until 15 minutes after. Well, guess what? The program director now has to call a pre-broadcast meeting with the operations person. The operations person's job is to get people that he can depend upon, or he or she can depend upon, to make this broadcast happen. And guess what? After they have their meeting, they have to all sign off memos delineating what they have to do so they all understand. And I don't care if it's 2 o'clock in the morning. From this point on, my program director has to be in the studio. And he has to call me prior to the broadcast. He has to call me when the broadcast starts. He has to call me when the broadcast ends. He did that today, and I'm proud of him, and I'm glad he did that. Because as I've told him, from this point on, your production and your performance will be evaluated on a daily basis. And people, when I came in, people said, you know, I heard you're here to fire me. So I'm not here to fire you. I'm here to fire you if you don't do your job. You don't do your job, you'll fire yourself. It won't be me. Moving on. Currently, it's a matter of, you know, getting people to actually pull themselves out of what they've been used to doing. And I understand that for the last 5 or 6 years, people have been used to not being able to go into each other's office and say, you know, we got an idea, let's kick this around for a little while. They've not been comfortable with, you know, working extra hours on something that somebody else came up with. Not that they came up with. I'm told now that, well, you know, Robert, there's a lot more smiling around the station. I feel a lot more comfortable coming to the station. I think I brokered a deal between 2 of my staff who hadn't spoken to each other for God knows how long. I had to take them to dinner twice. And I told them, I said, listen, I got to take you to dinner for the... from now on, every Thursday for the next month, I'll do it.
You're getting paid that much.
And no, I'm not. And that's the whole point. But I want it to happen. And besides, I didn't say where we were going to dinner. The bottom line, though, is they looked at me and said, really? You keep doing this? I said, yeah. They said, well, and they laughed because that let me know right then they were thinking, let's take advantage of this guy. But because of this effort, I'm not patting myself on the back. These two individuals now have no problem with walking into each other's office and sitting down and talking about plans. So, okay, that's cool for me. I mean, I like that. I mean, even though I expect giant steps immediately, I'm told that, well, Robert, you know, these are baby steps. We normally haven't planned for a pledge drive this early in advance the way we did this time. So therefore, the problems that we've had in the past about people registering premiums too late and all this kind of stuff, and the premiums director not getting a chance to register these things, and so sometimes people go in the air and don't know what they're asking for, it hasn't happened as much. Now, my side is it happened a couple times, which really pissed me off. But I'm told I need to be patient because these are baby steps, because this hasn't happened before or it hasn't happened a long time. Okay? So fine, I'll go with that. But the baby steps could only last so long for me. Once you start walking, you're going to have to start running. And once you start running, you're going to have to get on the bicycle and learn how to pedal. And once you do that, then you have to go uphill and downhill on a consistent basis, and that's what I'm looking for. And as I say, folks, I got 9 months. So I don't know if it's going to happen in the next 9 months, but that's my plan. Moving on. What I want to do is I want to make sure that the radio station invites everybody to become a part of the radio station. How do you do that? Well, our format at this point does not necessarily lend itself to that. And the formatting programming changes are going to come later. So for all of you who want these program changes to come immediately, it's not going to happen. I need to find out what the audience is. I need to find out what they want, and I want to try to tailor those things to them. I'd like to use, my idea is I'd like to use people like Ursula, who's lying down there, and to engage her in engaging the affiliate stations to provide us with ideas, pilot programs, things that we can use to sort of change the way the air sounds. I'd like to have a lot of events, outside events, fundraisers. For example, I have a friend of mine in Brooklyn who claims we can have there's a thriving music scene in Williamsburg, of all places, and that he thinks that it would be just a simple matter of us organizing enough so we could perhaps invite vendors, sell booths, set up our own booths, and sort of gain a larger footing into one of those boroughs like Brooklyn. Just an idea, but it's something that we're thinking about doing. BI needs a new image. So what I'm going to do when I get back is, along with our part-time development director, we're going to have a sort of a contest where we open it up to have people contribute logos, new logos for hats, T-shirts, tote bags, all these things, because it's great to offer premiums to people, but what about the premiums that have your radio station on them? I mean, I think that's what people really want to have. It's like Ron. Where's Ron? Ron's got the PFW hat. He's got the jacket. He's got the leather jacket. He's got the shoes. I'm sure he's got the PFW underwear. I'm sure he's got the whole thing. Right. You see what I'm saying? The bag like that. We need to be able to offer those sorts of things. And so what I would like to do is I'd like to have this contest run with the help of people from the LSB, some of our listeners, a couple of our listeners, some of our staff, you know, kind of make a judgment as to what logo will look the best, and that will become the face of WBAI for the next, I don't know how many years. Along that, with that, you initiate an advertising and marketing campaign to say, you know, WBAI is changing. You know, we don't necessarily have to change, but we can just tell them we're changing. Because if people have to understand about radio, just like about TV, we don't always have to do what the audience wants. Because a lot of times, in most cases, media is waiting for us to tell us what we want to do. I mean, I like cold beer. Well, excuse me, I don't drink beer. But if I wanted cold beer, I'd probably buy Coors, because Coors keeps telling me they have the coldest beer. So I want that beer. So what media has to do, and this is media, folks, I know you think with all these boards and all this kind of stuff, this is media, but you know, the stations could run without these boards. I appreciate the fact that these boards are here, but nevertheless, station could run very well without these boards, because media is spontaneous. Media is something that I don't have 2 weeks to consult with you, to write a policy, to talk to you, so y'all get together and have some more meetings and take 2-3 more weeks, and then everybody's ideas change, and we got to go through it all over again to initiate a policy that we should have initiated 4 weeks ago. Yeah. I don't have time for that, and sometimes, at some point, all the LSBs and USOCs and all y'all going to have to understand, there are certain times that the general manager and the program director have to make these unilateral decisions. We're not trying to exclude you. Honestly, we're not. I mean, some people would probably like, I'm not going to speak for the rest of them. I find it interesting that there are that many people who are passionate about the radio station. But at the same time, we have to recognize that there are only a few of us that have broadcasting and radio and journalistic qualifications. And we need to be allowed to do our jobs. We need to be allowed to do our jobs. Now, unlike some people I've heard from people say, well, you know, I got to deal with this union and these people. Listen, I invite them all. All y'all want to talk to me? I tell people all day, my door is open. It may have somebody in it, but it's open. You got my phone numbers, you got ideas, call me. But you know, that's what I need. I know what's wrong with the station. You know what's wrong with the station. What I need is help. I need ideas. When I call for volunteers, I want some of these board members to say, hey, Robert, we got some volunteers here that specifically help you with this, that, and that. Not the fact that, oh, by the way, your premiums department hasn't delivered a premium in the last 2 years. Well, can you give me somebody to help me get this together? Can you help me provide some help for my premiums department? Can you help me? That's all I'm asking for. I'm asking for a little help. I'm asking for cooperation. I'm asking for compromise. I'm asking for patience. And the main thing I'm asking for is for y'all to come together and realize that we're here to serve an audience. You know, you say the community. If the community knew what was really going on, the whole community, you talk about a riot. When I tell people I know about what goes on, they say, damn, and you mean they haven't burned it down yet? I said, no, that's because they get stuck on the train. They can't get over or something. I don't know what happens. But no, but seriously speaking, folks, it's got a valuable commodity here, and I guess that's why there's so much fighting. Everybody realizes it's valuable commodity, but if you don't understand, one group take over, the next group's going to try to take them over. Then that group will take over. Next group's going to try to take them over. And guess what? Nobody gets served. Nothing gets done. And I keep hearing complaints from everybody how we've been trying to do this for 5 years and it hasn't happened. We've been doing this for 4 years. It hasn't happened. You know, Robert, we tried to do this thing at the radio station 3 years ago, but it never happened. Why didn't it happen? It just got bogged down in politics and factionism. Now, listen, I'll engage all of you. I really will. But I need help. That's my message. Questions?
Before we go to questions, rather than give this short shrift and the three other managers short shrift, I looked at tomorrow's schedule, and I see we have 45 minutes for unfinished business, but I don't know that we have any. We have unfinished business? Motion? No. I'm not talking new business, and I'm not talking action items. I'm talking unfinished business means motions you started to handle and you didn't, and you postponed that were before the body, and you postponed. I don't believe we have any of those. So here's the point. Hang on. If we decided that we were going to postpone the other general manager's report till tomorrow,
hey folks, he's talking. Can y'all give him a little respect?
Pardon me. Okay. Well, hang on a second.
Just give him a chance.
So if we postpone, we'd be taking a risk because we tend to start late, and I wouldn't be surprised to see our executive session go late, and that unfinished business item was put there as a pad against that eventuality. But perhaps Lydia's saying Eva's leaving. You are both leaving. Are you going to be here tomorrow, Mr. Adams?
I'm leaving.
You're leaving. Our problem is we leave tonight at 10, but okay, so let's take 10 minutes now for this, and we'll have to fit the rest in, and we will look forward to speaking to you further in D.C. short soon. Bertolt.
Hi, Mr. Adam. How are you doing?
You tell me. How am I doing? y'all know how I'm doing. It's funny everybody asks me how you doing. How am I doing? I don't know.
From what you're saying here, it seems like you're doing well, and I'm glad about the way you deliver this message. And I'm one of the ones who spoke to you.
Yes, you are.
And warned you about the factionalism and so forth and so on. I will go on the record as saying that, as you said, yes, a lot of these ideas I have personally delivered, and then they went unanswered. As far also as Paul Ashby being helped, I was actively participating in that. And then nothing really happened with that. I'm going to say publicly, I'm going to take this challenge, and I'm going to start coming to the station, because I stopped going to the station because it was so venomous. There was such a venomous atmosphere. Toxic. So I am going to take this challenge, and I'm going to pick up where I left off 2 years ago with all these projects that were on their way, and I'm going to meet with you on a regular basis.
I certainly appreciate that. And you won't get a log jam this time, okay? As long as one thing, and I tell everybody the same thing. I'm not a handshake agreement person. You got to write it down for me. If you want me to take some action on it, write it down and send it to me. I'm not going to shake your hand and say, I'll get it done Tuesday. Because too many people say, you didn't tell me. So as long as you email me, I'm emailing,
yes.
Fine. We can get it taken
Absolutely.
Care of. Whatever you want, we can do it.
Thank
Absolutely.
You. Next.
We can do it.
Thank
I appreciate
you.
That.
Next.
No, sorry from you. Thank you, Mr. Adams. Thank you for coming here, and thank you for your very, very candid and forthright expression of your sentiments. You said that we have a valuable commodity. What do you really mean by that?
Radio? Well, if it affected me when I was that young to be this passionate and be this hooked on it. Because radio, once you get, that's why people keep coming to that radio station, they're hooked on it. Yeah, I'm not getting paid. Yeah, it's horrible. Yeah, 9/11 happened down the street. I think the carpet is polluted. I think we're going to die up in here. Yeah, it makes you sick, Robert. Won't work too hard because you're going to be sick. So once you get into radio, something gets into you, you can't let it go. What I mean by valuable commodity is that if people understood what we can do for them, which is our problem because we haven't shown them what we can do for them, they can actually enact some sort of change in their communities. They can actually enact some sort of internal change. Thank you. Give me the word. This one. I went to college just now. I'm not half as smart as everybody here. The bottom line is, I just think it's a valuable commodity because it will lend itself the opportunity for so many people to learn from it. I mean, if I can get these intern programs started that people keep telling me they're going to funnel me children from as young as junior high school to come up to the radio station, and when I get the operations people to get their act together so we can actually have a comprehensive training program. Do you know how happy these children are going to be? Do you know how excited they're going to be? Do you know how loyal they're going to be to this radio station? And you know what loyalty translates into? It translates into a larger audience. It translates into ultimately money. So that's what I mean by say valuable. Valuable in the sense that if we really do what we're supposed to do, we'll touch a lot of people. You know, we may not change the world for real. You know what I mean? For real. But we'll change our little part of the world. You know what I'm saying? That may sound a little naive and maybe idealistic, but I just believe it can happen. When I worked in Atlanta, when I worked at CLK, there are no less than 10 students and community volunteers that I dealt with that went on to do amazing things professionally. A couple of them ended up working for NBC Radio. A couple of them ended up starting their own businesses. And it wasn't because of me. It was because of the atmosphere. It was because of what we did to them. It's because of the way we ushered them in like family. We treated them all like family. Yeah, I screamed and yelled. I was really bad back then. I was the kind of person that if you said fuck on the air, you were gone. I used to tell them, if you say that word in the air in my radio station and I hear it on the air, you will be gone from the time it takes a baby to be born. They say, what do you mean? I said, how long does it take? They say, it takes 9 months. I said, that's when I want to see you again. Get out of here. I can't do that now. But that's what I'd like to. That's the kind of person I've mellowed since then. But I'm sorry. To answer your question, that's what I mean.
Go ahead.
Do you want that's Thomas?
Go ahead.
Mr. Adams?
Sir?
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure I had the last name right. I appreciate your presentation. I liked how you've been very direct and seemingly very forthright. I think that's very appropriate. Also appreciate you taking response. At least, the first time I've met you. You seem to be taking responsibility for the obligations placed on your job and also for the success and failures at your station. I think that's commendable. I appreciate you not vacillating. I just wanted to say that I suppose you have the same feeling that I'm about to express, but if you don't, this is my advice. The job that you have isn't one where you necessarily have to be liked by the people who are working with you. The job that you have requires that you do a good job. if people don't like you, but the job is done well, and they get credit for the job that's done well, and they hate you even though they're credited for a job done well, you know. And if you want to stay, then you might still be there. And if, you know, you, another thing is, if you're satisfied with your own work and you're wrongly discharged, then you're still proud of your own work and you can credit yourself with the successes of the station that were, you know, those successes that took place under your helm. So, my, you know, I ain't really, I think when I started out and I laid out the praise, you probably was picking up, oh, here's the Pacific thing. He's getting ready to ask me a question. But my thing, okay, well, you weren't even on that. You just ahead of your time. My basic thing is, you don't have to be like, as long as you believe in what you're doing, that's appropriate. Now, I hope that it's as good as the presentation. Then I'm sure I'll like you too. So
I'm going to give you an example of not being like. When I was in Atlanta, I was so hard on my staff, my parents came to visit me one day. One of my announcers said to me, "You mean we have people in this world who love you?"
Okay. We have time for...
It's not about being like. I appreciate that, though.
We have time for Don's question.
Oh, okay.
Then we go to the other managers.
Your radio guy.
It's about being I know, but I mean, my mother told me I was able to project, sir.
Right. Really, I've enjoyed your presentation very much, and I feel a lot of positive feelings about this. It seems to me, I've been in that station, I've been around the board for a while, it seems to me the thing that was lacking was a management team, a sense of a team coming together and doing what you're beginning to describe is happening. I mean, we've had some, I mean, I'm going to be blunt. My own view is that there has been a level of lack of teamwork that has really held it back. So my very rudimentary, basic question is, and I believe I know the answer already, you believe that you're building at WBAI, you're building a management team, trust is being developed, and there's going to be a management team that can kind of move forward together to address the very important issues there.
In 45 seconds.
That's quite utopian, yes. Yeah, that's it. I believe. Okay. Just real quick. You know, program director Bernard White comes under a lot of fire. But I told him when I walked in his office, I said, "Look, I need you. I don't know. So at least for now, you're okay. But I need you to do what I need you to do." So, yeah, it'll be a great team.
Okay.
If we all get together and do it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I want to add one thing. I'm on the Finance Committee, and I have often objected to additional spending to keep doing what we're still doing, and said at the same time that if what we're talking about is an investment in doing something that's going to change something, I'm all on that. And we can. I would like to find the money for an investment to get you out of your current situation. What I wasn't willing to do was to keep subsidizing the same situation, and I'm willing to put more money in to invest in something new, and this is just me, and I'm just one vote. But what I would like, in the spirit of what you said about something written down, is if you could write down to this board what you would need, because you talked about Lonnie having your back and Greg having your back,
right.
But what would you need from this board to have a sense that this board was making the efforts it needed to help the change that needs to happen?
You'll have it by Friday.
So, great. Thank you very much. With that, we have the manager's report. Got down that we'll have that report by Friday, right? Okay.